28 minutes past seven on Monday night, Serena.
You don't want me to go?
No. No, I don't want you to go to the police. There were other people. Why should you be the only one involved?
But I am involved. We are all involved. Mom, a boy, a kid was killed tonight. I don't see how I can get out of that by pretending that it didn't happen.
Well, you know that you did the wrong thing. That's the main thing, isn't
That's
it?
That's nothing. That is absolutely nothing. Dad, you told me. You said you want me to tell the truth. Now, didn't you say that? You can't turn it off.
Well, he's not saying that. He's saying just don't volunteer.
Just tell a little white lie.
You'll learn when you're older, Jim.
Well, I don't think that I want to learn that way.
James Dean there, playing the part of Jim Stark in the movie Rebel Without a Cause, alongside Jim Backus and Anne Dorn, playing his parents, Frank and Carol. Now, you don't need to be a Hollywood history buff to know that James Dean was tragically killed in 1955, nor do you need to be an American history buff to know that the involvement of the United States in the Vietnam War really escalated in the subsequent decade, the 1960s. So, the notion of James Dean starring in a movie about the Vietnam War sounds more than a little improbable. Particularly when that movie is currently in production. News broke last month that the Vietnam War movie called Finding Jack is in the offing, starring, yes, the one and only James Dean. Now, Dean's family had given their blessing to the project, but the decision hasn't gone down well in other quarters. And it raises lots of questions around the ethics, the law, the technology behind recreating long since dead movie stars on screen in the 21st century. And to help us answer some of those questions, or maybe pose more questions, Ruth Barton from Trinity College has taken a look at the story, as has film producer and entertainment lawyer Bill Grantham, both of whom are with me in studio. Let's get the specifics of this James Dean project, first of all, Finding Jack. Where did the idea, how did it even come about that a film could be made in 2019 into 2020 starring James Dean?
Yeah, well, this film has got two potential directors called Anton Ernst and Tati Golic, and they claim that they want to make this film. Mm. It's about a Vietnam vet and a Labrador, and the vet is a veteran. And they claim...
It's due for release on Veterans Day next year.
Yes.
2020.
And the Labrador, I presume, is Jack. Mm. But they claim that they looked around for casting one of the characters, one of the main characters. They couldn't find any suitable actor, and it just came to their collective minds that they should, in fact, cast posthumously James Dean. And this is what they plan to do, which is to digitally recreate James Dean on screen. And this has, of course, caused outrage and uproar in Hollywood and elsewhere, because there are, as you said, so many, not just legal issues, ethical issues, aesthetic issues that come with this.
Well, let's get some of the legal issues maybe out there, and this is where you'll come in, Bill. So we have, he's going to be digitally recreated. So it's not a matter that we have images of James Dean sitting somewhere that are just going to be reused in some way. What are the issues, what are the legal issues around actually using somebody's image, somebody who's dead?
Well, we don't know a great deal about what they're going to do. I mean, if they were going to use clips and somehow recreate a three-dimensional character from the clips, that would implicate the copyright of the owners of those clips. So it seems more likely that they will take some kind of source, which they would probably also need the rights to, still pictures and so on, and scan them and build a character out of them. But it's a real legal minefield.
But let me, I mean, if you had anything of James Dean's in, you know, in your back catalogue, or that you owned the rights to it, would you be, you know, putting your fingers together, Scrooge-like at the moment, thinking, payday on the way?
They'll have to be very careful about it, the producers. Mm. The fact that they have the family working with them, the family has given permission, I presume will receive some kind of payment for it. It also, it's a reasonable supposition that the family will own photographs of James Dean that don't belong to anybody else. So probably they can work their way through it. But and if you didn't have the family involved, you would have a big problem. And even with the family involved, you don't necessarily know who owns the rights. I don't believe that James Dean left a will. I think he, what as well, lawyers say, he died intestate.
Yeah.
And so there would be some formula by which the rights would pass to family members. In California, where he died, where he lived and where he died, and whose law would apply to this, it, the formula for who gets what share, and then how do the members of the family vote on who gets what share, is quite complicated. And I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a lawsuit coming out of the, you know, some, you know, cousin James appearing out of nowhere and saying, no, I have a bit of that. I don't give my permission.
Okay. So we're it's in production at the moment. You would have thought that if, well, at least a portion of the legal arguments ironed out, but maybe there are still things to come, as you say, suggest, Bill, still things coming down the line. That's one aspect of it. Now let's talk about technological side of things and how you might do that. And I suppose maybe one of the ways we could do this is to look at previous examples of how this happened. And Rogue One is a perfect example where Peter Cushing,
yeah. He was reanimated for Rogue One.
So explain how he was reanimated.
Well, they got lucky on Rogue One because they actually had a 3D of his face. So they had 3D.
And they probably owned that.
And they owned that. So they had done a 3D imaging of his face for the, you know, the film that he... Star Wars when he appeared as live in it. Having a 3D image is really, really helpful. And obviously this is not what they're going to have with James Dean, because once they have the 3D image...
It just wouldn't have existed,
No, of course it wouldn't have. No, the technology wasn't there at all. So once they have the 3D image, it's then, you know, relatively speaking, easy but fantastically expensive then to recreate multiple, basically photographs of this 3D image, the range of expressions that character is going to need. So this is all done digitally and it's basically imposed on their face.
So what we got in the case of Rogue One then, he plays this role of the Grand Moff Tarkin.
Yeah, but you've only got his face, right?
Yeah, all we have is his face. Now, how did we get the rest of the image and the voice?
Well, then you see what you have to do is you have an actor. So for that, you have an actor who does the acting body part.
Who presumably has a physique similar to Cushing. Who would look like Cushing. Part of the casting process.
And that's why you would have been cast. And for a voice that will be good enough to pass as Cushing. So you're melding the two together for that. And that's actually easier than what they're planning to do with James Dean, where they won't have that. And it's also fantastically expensive and fantastically long. I mean, this is a long process.
It's peculiar this now. I want to listen to this clip from Rogue One. And, you know, if you think it's Peter Cushing, well, then it doesn't really matter because radio's a different thing. But let's have a listen to the clip.
Most unfortunate about the security breach on Jeddah, Director Krennic. After so many setbacks and delays, and now this... We've heard word of rumors circulating through the city. Apparently, you've lost a rather talkative cargo pilot. If the Senate gets wind of our project, countless systems will flock to the rebellion.
When the battle station is finished, Governor Tarkin, the Senate will be of little concern.
When has become now, Director Krennic, the Emperor will tolerate no further delay. You have made Time an ally of the rebellion. I suggest we solve both problems simultaneously with an immediate test of the weapon. Failure will find you explaining why to a far less patient audience.
See, it's much harder to do fakey on radio.
Because it doesn't sound right, but you just automatically make the link there.
Yeah, because
the
voice...
You make the assumption when you see it.
Yeah, the two voices we heard there were Ben Mendelsohn and... Guy Henry. Guy Henry doing the voice of Peter Cushing. But both of you looked, our producer sent us out all out clips today of that scene. When you're looking at Peter Cushing, his face doing it, it sounds like Peter Cushing. Did you find that, Bill, looking
at
it?
Well, yeah, you do believe it on screen. There's a sort of suspension of disbelief. You're going to say, well, that's Peter Cushing. That voice has to be Peter Cushing. But, you know, and it's been done before. I mean, interestingly, with James Dean, after he got killed during the making of Giant. There was one scene he was meant to be doing redubs for. He was drunk when he did the scene originally, and because he was a method actor, the character was drunk, and so he felt he had to be drunk. But George Stevens pointed out you couldn't actually understand anything he said. So then he goes off and gets killed. So they actually got an actor in to dub James Dean's voice. onto that scene, which is kind of ironic considering what we're going through.
Yeah, but I guess in some, there's something there that I suppose this is where we get into the ethical field.
Well, there is,
in the case of that, you would say, well, okay, the movie was nearly shot. It wasn't going to serve James Dean anything to have him act badly in a scene. So why not let's get somebody to voice it who will sound like the character.
I think there's no issue with doing that at all. I mean, and we've all seen, you might look at Fast and Furious 7 when Paul Walker died.
Yeah.
And his two brothers, you know, did the body part for the final thing. And it was for them a tribute to their brother. And I think that's fantastic. You know, nothing wrong with that. But you would have to ask yourself, hypothetically, James Dean, the method actor, now can no longer be a method actor. Because when he takes his part in Finding Jack, he's not acting. So he is being put there as a puppet by these other guys. And so the performance would be nothing like what he would have as a method actor done. So here's the, if you like, both aesthetic and ethical question that this raises is, you have no control posthumously over your performance.
And the other side of that is that there's kind of an inherent suggestion there that an actor has a finite number of facial expressions, a finite number of emotional expressions, and really all he or she has to do then is dip into the box of emotions and say, I'll use emotion number 423 for this scene. It's a kind of dodgy area.
I think we should never underestimate the technology. I mean, we were talking beforehand about The Irishman, where Robert De Niro and Al Pacino have been quote, youthified, is the new expression. I believe it's now in the dictionary, youthification. And some people, Ruth was saying earlier when we were talking beforehand, that she didn't really care for it very much. It didn't bother me to the same extent.
Yeah. I found it a distraction, yeah.
I came across this quote when I was taking a look by a man named J.C.R. Licklider, who is a real man, who was a very distinguished professor at MIT in America and who was one of the gurus of the internet back in 1965. This is what he said. He said, people tend to overestimate what can be done in 1 year and to underestimate what can be done in 5 to 10 years. I think that's absolutely true.
I suppose if you look where technology was 5 or 10 years ago, you'd be astonished as to where we are today.
Well exactly. And I think what they've done in The Irishman in 5 or 10 years will look incredibly crude compared with what they're able to do now.
But we're touching on the ethical side of things, and I'm bringing up a big word here now, because who wants to moralise about these matters? But I think you can give us the example in terms of the rights to whatever it is, Bill, be it, you know, an image or a piece of writing. Very different scenario in France, where there's more of a moral imperative around what's done with stuff.
Well, yes.
Intellectual property.
I mean, the big picture is that we know about copyright, the right in films and books and music and so on. And there are, every country has its own copyright law, but there's an international treaty, or actually a number of treaties, which kind of bind together all the copyright laws of all the world. So it's reasonably predictable what will happen with a copyright. If your Irish copyright is infringed in Brazil, you know, there's a system where you can kind of go and enforce your rights. This doesn't apply to these rights, which are sometimes called personality rights or rights of publicity, as kind of the term of art. What you have is 150 different laws and no binding treaties to hold the whole thing together.
Yeah, and this is the whole thing with digital, with the internet, isn't it? Yeah. How do you get a worldwide law, if you like?
Well, the way you would do it, if you had time, would be you would actually get all the countries of the world together. There is actually a UN body that does this.
And you think they'd agree?
You do an international treaty. Yeah. But that's not going to happen. Yeah. It's certainly not going to happen quickly. And you mentioned France. France does have a concept in copyright law called moral rights, which does suggest that they could look quite severely at the infringement of the personality rights of a dead actor, particularly if it was a dead French actor.
I would have thought so. Let's have a listen. Now, this is a trailer from a movie, so it's kind of, if you went into the cinema and you saw this, you'd get a sense of what the movie is about. It's called The Congress.
Robin Wright for Jeff Green.
You were the future, Robin. You were Princess Bride. And now I'm in this situation.
What situation are you in, Jeff?
The situation of offering you the last contract that you'll ever have. We want to scan you. All of you. Your body, your face, your emotions, your laughter, your tears. And we want to own this thing called Robin Wright.
There you go. So in 2014, in the film called The Congress, they were ahead of the posse.
They were actually... And you know what the scary thing is? It's happening now. Because if you are a rising young actor now, you are being advised to bank yourself. And that is that you do your whole body 3D image, aged 25, aged 30, aged 35, etc., all the way up. So when you hit 70, you can absolutely realistically play yourself at age 7, age 25.
And you used to say that about Crap's Last Tape, that every actor should make a tape at 40 so that they can do Crap's Last Tape when they're 70, looking back at your 40th birthday.
Yeah, because it's the voice. And so, I mean, this is just a really scary thing. I mean, Bill, you watch this.
Yeah.
One review of The Congress described the movie as bonkers. And I think that was a very good...
In other words,
review.
This could never happen.
But Robin Wright plays this actress, and she has a very sick son who needs looking after, and she doesn't want to act anymore anyway. And she ends up doing this deal with the studio where she basically sells all her future digital rights. She can never act again, and she looks after her son.
Are we in a very different world here, really, just to finish, as we finish up? I was looking at some stuff today about deep faking, isn't it? That's what they call it, where, you know, basically this is used in news footage where you voice over, the technology is so good that you can put words into anybody's mouth for whatever purposes you want. I suppose you could do it with pornographic images as well.
Yeah, I mean, like, this raises even more incredible ethical issues, because in the era of fake news, already, you know, you look at a photographic image, you don't know if it's been photoshopped. Mm. We're now going to look at the moving image, a digital image, and there's no guarantee that there's any reality behind it, that there's ever been a camera pointing and shooting at the object you see on screen. So it's up for grabs.
Yeah, and absolutely. Legally and morally, it's a morass, is it?
This film may be easier than other attempts, but it will be very, very, very messy before we kind of get a clear line of what the law says.
All right, and in 10 or 15 years' time, they'll be saying, what was all the fuss about you? We can do it very easily now. All right, that's Ruth Barton and Bill Grantham there speaking to us around some of the issues about reanimating dead actors. And Finding Jack, the movie that we've been speaking about, starring James Dean, whatever version of James Dean that is, due for release on Veterans Day 2020. That's presuming all legal, moral, ethical and technological problems are solved in the meantime. Ruth Barton is actually still with us. I just wanted to check in with you, Ruth, before we go. The Golden Globe nominations announced today. First of all, the Irish interest is big, particularly two actor nominations.
Yes, well, Saoirse Ronan, it wouldn't be in an award ceremony if she wasn't being nominated, and here she is being nominated for Little Women. Yeah, absolutely, and so good luck to her. And then Andrew Scott for one of my favourite TV series, Fleabag, as the Hot Priest.
Right,
we've got an interest in both of those.
Yes, big interest there. Were there surprises for you? The big story here too.
Big story, the winner is Netflix.
Netflix, yeah.
This is the big story. I mean, last year there were eyebrows raised, you know, Roma, could it really be a film if Netflix had made it? Now there's just, they have arrived.
The Irishman,
they have
married. They weren't distracted clearly like you were.
No, they weren't. They fell for it. Marriage Story, which, of course, everybody loves Marriage Story. The Two Popes, not my favourite either.
Those are three of the, there are six in the Best Motion Picture totally, 1917 and Joker, sorry, five. So three of the five are Netflix.
Yeah, this is massive. This is really massive. And I mean, you can see them already. This is the extraordinary thing too, The Irishman and Marriage Story already.
That's it after a month, isn't it? They're on the telly and you can watch them.
They're running concurrently in the cinema and on Netflix, which is just, this is such a big change. And they've bought a cinema. Netflix has bought a cinema as well. So they have really changed things.
Totally. Shift in the business. Any big surprises for you on the list?
Well, you know, you shouldn't be surprised, but all the big nominations are for white guys. Where is diversity in these awards? Not only is it, there's virtually no gender diversity, there's no colour diversity, there's no ethnic diversity. This is a very, very conventional list of nominations. And, you know, you just would think, you know, personally, I could have dropped The Irishman and Joker, to be honest, and I could have substituted them. You know, why can't Little Women, why can't Greta Gerwig get a nod for that? There are women out there and there are people of colour out there making films, and you know, it wouldn't kill them to nominate them.
So your surprise is...
My surprise is no surprise, I suppose. Yeah, I mean, I was kind of like, oh, here we go again. So you know, when's the message going to get through? Those are my admissions.
And Andrew Scott and Saoirse Ronan both in with a big chance there?
Oh, I think so. I haven't seen Little Women. It hasn't been released here yet. But I'm just such a fan of Fleabag and I'm really gunning for it. I really hope he gets it.
I think everybody wants to see that one going a step further. Okay, that's the Golden Globes. I'm going to hear the results January the 5th, I think it is.
January the 5th, yeah.
January 5th, 2020.